This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and good New Year's Eve, and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio. Coming up on today's show, we will talk about the guy who invented Atari in Profiles in IT. Can being on multiple social networks reveal too much about you? Turning tequila into diamonds. Also, tweeting for food and in food science. We'll talk about frozen meat, mushrooms, and the magic of champagne.
Now it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
And we have a letter from Alan.
Uh-huh. Thanks
Dear
for listening, Alan.
Tech Talk, I would like to start an IT career. What do you advise? I can't get a job without experience. But I can't get experience without a job. It's the chicken and egg problem.
Go figure.
And I seem to be caught between the chicken and the egg. Well, Alan, this is the same kind of question that we get from all of our students at Stratford University when they're starting out their careers. They need to get a job, but the job wants them to get experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are a number of things that you can do quite readily. And the primary thing that you want to do, Alan, is to start acting like you're already working. I mean, sort of the analogy I like to give, if you were a truck, if you wanted to drive a bus.
You'd go steal a bus and drive it, right?
I mean, you would actually get some driving experience first.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't say, well, I can't get a job as a bus driver until I get a job as a bus driver to get experience. You'd have to start getting experience before you get the job, actually, and that's kind of the key element. So, number one, start reading the kind of literature that people in the field read. They call these industry rags. You know, these are like free,
sure.
They're freebies. They have, like in IT, you've got all kinds of things like PC Magazine. That was not free. You charge a little bit for that. They've got PC Week. They've got CIO Magazine at CIO.com, Network Magazine, Information Security Magazine at InfoSecurityMag.com. Lots of them. You can find them. You want to subscribe to a good number of those and just read what the people in the industry are reading. For one thing, it lets you know what is worth learning.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gives you some insightful comments to make while you are in the job interview. Now, secondly, you want to get the competencies that are demanded by the industry. Now, either through self-study or by going to school, like at Stratford University. And if you want to go into IT or programming, you need certain core competencies that the industry would like. Make certain when you're going into IT that you learn the standards and the procedures that support the industry. You see, if you understand the underlying standards, you have knowledge which is going to have a long time value. It's not going to go out of style, quickly. For instance, the underlying protocol standard on the internet, TCPIP, Transmission Control Protocol, Internet Protocol, was actually developed out in California in 1973. It's been here 83, 93, 2003. It's been around for 25 years. So if you learn TCPIP, the underlying protocol on the internet, well, I mean, that's going to be around a good long while.
Sure.
And now that they have IP version 4 now, they're about ready to come out with IPv6, which is going to be here. So you understand any of the underlying software standards, you're going to be like XML, which is a standard way to transfer data from one database to another. So always go back to the standards organization and understand the underlying standards. It's really a way of learning. I like to give another analogy in terms of deciding what's worth learning. Suppose that you were driving down the street in a car.
That's a good way to drive down the street.
Normally I drive down the street.
Can I just say something? You're scaring me. You're holding scissors over there, and you put them down, please.
I was making some final adjustments to Blimpy.
You've got something sharp in your hands, and it's bothering me.
All right. You know, I don't have the best of reputations here in this studio, so I'll stay. I will put the scissors down.
Primarily with things in your pocket. That
so when you're driving down the road, if you look out the windshield and you see, you know, a slight curve to the left, you know, you could, it's relatively easy to respond to changes in the road. You can see the road, you know, move up and down and right and left as you're driving. Now, suppose now you're looking out the side window of the car,
mm-hmm.
and bushes and trees are flying by so fast. You say, "How can I possibly keep up with all of what's going on? I can't keep track of all of the stuff passing by the side window." If you simply try to learn all the marketing hype that the company's come out with, it's like looking out the side window of the car. It's, you know, marketing hype comes and it goes, but it doesn't mean much. If you look out the front window of the car, it's like learning the underlying standards. Things don't really change that quickly.
Right.
And so that you can, they're around for a long time. You know, like, you know, say like Intel brought out their 32-bit chip back in, 1985, 1986. And you know, it wasn't until a good long while that Microsoft, 10 years after the chip came out, that Microsoft actually came out with an operating system that supported the 32-bit chip. That was a 10-year delay.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft tends to come out with technology about 10 years delayed after the standards are there.
Now, you were talking about, you know, keeping up with the industry regs.
Mm-hmm.
Most folks, you don't have to subscribe to all these. Go to the local library, right?
You can go to the local library, yeah, mm-hmm. and just start reading.
Yeah.
Now, fourth, package yourself with a well-written resume that emphasizes where you're going rather than where you've been. I mean, people tend to make a mistake is that they list all of the jobs that they've had, and they tend to get locked into their resume.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you really want to have something that projects where you're going and what you could do, which is it's very important to embed that in your resume. Now, join user groups. There are a lot of IT user groups around. Like you can join PC user groups. There's Oracle user groups. There's MySQL user groups, Linux user groups. These are all people that like technology. They talk about technology. Go to the user groups and volunteer to help out at the meetings. You know, there's always somebody that needs to help get set up. And you know what? Every time you go to a meeting and work with the folks there at these user groups, these are all people that are working in the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know what happens? They're going to like the way you operate. They're going to like the way you think. And they're going to, and when a job comes up, they're going to think of you.
They're going to invite you into their clubhouse.
Now, the key thing, don't go to the users group and start asking for a job. Nobody
will
want to talk to you. Just
no.
Go there because you truly do love the information. Now, go out and survey the employers. And you can survey employers to find out where they're going. And many times you can set up appointments with people in, you know, 5 to 10 minutes to find out what's going on and start surveying what's out there. You'll learn a lot. Now, finally, and this is one of the most important things, start doing technical projects at home. Don't sit around saying, "Well, I can't get any experience." Well, you've got your neighbor's probably a bunch of old computers around. You could gather a bunch of old computers. You could make a cluster, a Linux cluster, using the free Bay of Wolf software that's out there. You could build a Linux cluster. You just take all these old machines, hook them together with an Ethernet connection, load on the Bay of Wolf cluster software that supports the Linux operating system, and you could make yourself, I mean, it wouldn't be a fast machine because you're using old, you know, old machines from around the neighborhood.
But it's a machine.
But you could say, I've built a cluster.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could take a machine, you could load on, you could load a web server on it, you could make a web server out of your house. Or you could install a MySQL database and make a database-driven website. There are a number of things you could do at home. So
I
when
built
you go
clusters at home.
You like peanut clusters?
Yes.
Well, so the thing is, then when you go out on the job, you can talk about the web server you built, the MySQL database you set up, the Beowulf cluster that you built. You see, they never said that your experience had to be paid experience. That's where
That's
people get confused. You just do what you're interested in, and you show, because you're interested in things, that you have the ability to solve problems and to learn. And then when you go to a user, like if you, say, want to make a Beowulf cluster or a Linux, you go to the Linux user group, and you talk to people, and they'll help you work on your project. And over time, they'll see how you behave, how you solve problems, how inquisitive you are, and you're demonstrating what you would do on the job. Mm-hmm. So you see, you're already behaving like a professional. So this is what we tell our students. So we embed projects within all their classes. So when they get out of Stratford University, either in information systems, software engineering, network design, database design, there, whatever any of our, we've got a whole slew of IT course programs there and degrees. When they get out, they don't just take their transcript. They talk about actual projects they've done. Now, you can get some real good advice, real good keys on how to develop your career. There's a book that I just love, What Color Is Your Parachute? By Dick Bowles.
Yes.
It's been on the bestseller list for the past 25 years. Dick Bowles puts out an annual update to this book, and it basically tells you how to figure out who you are, where you want to go, how to package yourself, how to do the surveys, and how to organize a job search strategy, which is different than just flooding the marketplace with resumes, which typically doesn't work.
It's New Year's Eve, and this is Tech Talk Radio from the Virtual Faculty Lounge at Stratford University, coming to you via 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2. Federal News Radio, stand by. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Virtual Faculty Lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio. You're listening on Federal News Radio.
I got the blimp working.
Yeah, you sure do.
We have
guests in the studio today, and I'm afraid somebody's going to get hurt with this thing.
Oh, my goodness. It's going to give somebody a haircut going down there.
Uh-huh.
So
it is. So
this
blimpy, explain this.
This actually has a helium balloon, helium dirigible.
It looks like it's about the size of one of those balloons you buy at the supermarket that says happy birthday on it, right?
Yeah.
It's a Mylar balloon. It's silver. And now it's stuck against the ceiling.
Oh, it's caught against the...
You might be able to hear this off
yeah.
in the distance.
Well, let me just bring it down here a little bit.
Yeah, you do that. That will be the other down dog.
Oh, yeah.
Here it comes. Ah, watch your fingers. He just grabbed it.
Oh, yeah, here we go. I'm going to bring... this is the up and down blade. Well, it has three propellers on it. One propeller goes up and down, and then the other two propellers go forward and backward. And they're basically you have to get this thing synchronized on which channel you want.
Yeah.
And then there are a couple of control methods.
I have the sinking feeling.
Now there are a couple of control methods here. I may
is that the anti-collision avoidance device
yeah,
going
Blimpy,
off there.
Blimpy may need some additional. Oh, now it's trying to resynchronize itself. It may need some extra help, but then
there
are you can either use the traditional blimp control method, Or you can use the airplane control method.
Uh-huh.
And so the airplane control method is, you know, you've got these two joysticks. You can control it one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact is, I've tried both control methods, Jim, and I crash into everything.
Yeah, I noticed. Well, you broke both the helicopters last week, and it's a good thing you don't have a real pilot's license.
You'd
never
problem.
Get a real pilot's license.
No, that's
license.
Right. You know, I have a PhD
right.
in physics.
We're
you know, I'm
play
not,
with the
I can't do anything useful. Yeah.
Bit. Okay, well, let's do something else.
Okay.
Right.
Now we're going to talk about Nolan K. Bushnell. Bushnell is father of the video game industry.
Uh-huh.
And founder of Atari. Nolan K. Bushnell was born February 5th, 1943 in Clearfield, Utah. Bushnell...
What is going on?
Yeah, Bushnell received his BSEE from the University of Utah in 1968. Now, while Bushnell was going to University of Utah, he would sneak into the computer labs between 1 and 4 in the morning to play Space War.
Uh-huh.
And Fox and Geese on the university's $7 million deck mainframe. Yeah.
Because it's there.
After he got out of, after he got his bachelor degree, he moved to Santa Clara, California, which is right in the heart of Silicon Valley.
Uh-huh.
That was in 1968. He built his first computer game in a spare bedroom. It was a knockoff of Space Wars. He called it Computer Space. And he tried to sell this. You see, what he did, he commercialized video games. You see, he didn't really invent video games because there were video games that would run on a $7 million computer. There's not much market for that.
No.
He developed games that would run on small PCs you could have in your house.
Huh.
At age 27, he founded Atari with $250 of his own money and another $250 from his business partner, Ted Dabney. The original name of the company was... Syzygy.
Syzygy?
Yeah. S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y. Syzygy.
Uh-huh.
Now...
Not going to work.
No, well, they... Well, actually, Syzygy was not that successful in the beginning.
Go figure.
And then it turned out there was a roofing company with the same name as Syzygy.
That might explain it.
And there was also a hippie commune group out in Mendocino that had trademarked Syzygy. So they had to change the name... And he came up with the name Atari.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bushnell conceived the idea of Pong. Now, Pong was actually the first video game that I ever played.
Pong is burned into my brain,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, Pong is, you know, he wasn't developed enough. He wasn't developed enough to write... The full...
Oh, the scissors.
Yeah.
How about you hand them to me? I'm busy playing with a computer over here to make sure things work. I now have the dreaded... These are sharp.
You see, Bushnell had not developed enough to develop the full game Ping Pong. He could only do Pong. And so Pong has got two paddles, one on the left of the screen, one on the right side of the screen, and you have to... hit this little cursor symbol back and forth between the two panels by moving the little paddles up and down.
I've lost brain cells playing this, trust me.
Yeah, well, you know, I mentioned this game to my son, and he said, oh, yeah. He said, I've got a PSP, and he brought in, and we were playing Pong within 5 minutes.
Wow.
He had all the old Atari games.
That's great.
Well, Bushnell conceived the idea of Pong, which would become the world's first commercial video game. And in 1973, they hired their first full-time employee, Al Alcorn. Now, Al was assigned to write the code for Pong, so Al Alcorn wrote Pong. They released it. Now, get this. They started the company in 72. In 73, they had $11 million in revenue.
That's amazing. And this is 1973.
2 years later, their revenues jumped to $36 million. This guy was riding a high kite.
He was
a high flyer.
This was all there was back then.
Now, shortly after 73, he made his first mistake. There were a couple of guys that, you know, that were sort of friends with some of the Atari employees, and they took some spare parts from the Atari computer,
mm-hmm.
and they had these Atari employees make a printed circuit board that had a few other functions on it, and they put together a little homebrew computer. And they offered the homebrew computer to Atari to as part of their product line. The two guys who did it, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak.
I think I know where we're going here.
Now, Bushnell said, you know, I'm not in the computer business. Why don't you guys take that little computer and play with it yourself? So they started Apple Computer with the design that Bushnell turned down, made out of spare Atari parts.
Mm.
Now, in 76, he sold Atari to Warner Brothers for $28 million. Now, he had the company 4 years. He started when he was 27, so at age 31, he was worth $28 million in 1976. Not too shabby. Now, he stayed on for a consultant for a couple of years, but he got fed up with Warner because they were too slow, too conservative, and they didn't want to come out with new computers versions fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they went into their first... Atari went into the coin-operated video game market and soon dominated it. Now, coin-operated video games were really big in the early 80s before home computers came out.
Mm-hmm.
And then that market just crashed in 84.
Yeah.
Now, Atari started producing home game systems, and Sears promised to buy them all. By 1982, Atari had grown to $2 billion in annual sales.
Wow.
1982. Now, the crash, remember, for, you know, Atari came around 83, 84.
Mm-hmm.
Atari introduced the 800 computer, which at that time had superior technology to both the Apple II in the IBM PC, with the exception of memory management. But Warner was slow in accommodating the fast-changing computer market. And for instance, Dan Bricklin wanted to put his spreadsheet program, VisiCalc, on the Atari computer, and they were just too slow to come out with a computer that would support VisiCalc.
Mm-hmm.
VisiCalc was released first on the Apple II. And that is what transformed Apple into the business market.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what got Apple rolling. Atari missed VisiCalc. They missed the Apple design, then they missed VisiCalc. This was under the dynamic management of Warner Communications.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by 1984, Atari had $500 million loss per year, and it was sold at a fire sale by Warner. Now, of course, Bushnell had been out of Atari since 78. But in 78, when he left Atari, he came up with his next big idea. He said, look, why don't I create a restaurant, and I'll have video games in the restaurant, and kids can come in, and they can buy pizza, and then they can play video games. And he was going to use that as sort of a way to get people introduced to Atari. And so he started the Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time Theater.
Oh, no. He's to blame for this.
Yeah. Cheese Pizza Time Theater. It opened in San Jose, the heart of Silicon Valley, in 1978. The company went public in 1981, and at that point, Bushnell's net worth was $70 million. He was riding high. This was back, you know, in the early 80s, where $70 million. But by 1983, Pizza Time Theaters had over 200 restaurants operating internationally, including Canada, Hong Kong, UK. And then he started another business called the Catalyst Technologies, because he was really top of the heap there out in Silicon Valley then in the early 80s. And he would invest $500,000 a pop into new startups. And one of his startups was ETAC, which was very successful. And the second startup, another was Androbot. Now, ETAC made electronic maps for auto and navigation uses that would eventually become the maps that are in our GPS navigation systems. It was ultimately purchased by Rupert Murdoch for $50 million. It's not a bad deal.
That's not a bad deal at all.
Then he got started on Androbot. Now, this is what really, really set him down. Now, Androbot developed personal robots, Bob and Topo.
Uh-huh.
Now, to finance Androbots and the associated R&D costs, he took personal loans from Merrill Lynch Private Capital, which were secured by Pizza Time stock.
Uh-huh.
And he started going, and Merrill Lynch said they were going to take Androbot public in 1983. But it turned out, remember, Atari crashed around 82,
right.
83. It turns out that Pizza Time Mark, the Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time markets began losing money around 83 because people realized it was a cardboard pizza. And Merrill Lynch canceled the Andrabot IPO.
If you ever took one bite of it, you'd know that it was cardboard pizza.
That's right. Now, this was after Bushnell had invested more than $5 million. Ultimately, he put almost $25 million in Andrabot. Now, Pizza Time was losing money in 83. Bushnell's net worth dropped from $23 to $9 million. In 1984, after he racked up $22 million in debt financing Andrabot, nice, because Bob and Topo never took off, Pizza Time filed for bankruptcy under Chapter 11. Now, that, of course, secured all the money they got from Merrill Lynch. So Merrill Lynch came after him with a vengeance. By 1990, Bushnell had paid back $27.5 million to Merrill Lynch. In 1997, he was forced to sell his last asset, his home, to make the final payment to Merrill Lynch. Now he's working on his newest venture, Uwink, which is uwink.com. Mm-hmm. And this is where they have screens, touch screens in restaurants, and you order your food from the touch screen. You pick exactly what you want. You can pay from the touch screen. And then you don't have waiters and waitresses taking your orders or taking your check.
That's a pretty neat idea.
So that's what he's doing now. So there you go, Nolan K. Bushnell. The guy, I mean, he during the bad times, he did have a private yacht, which he called Charlie. He spent a lot of time on his
during
yacht.
During the bad times?
Yeah, he'd go away when things would get really bad. He'd go out. And
is he still with us?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still with us.
He's still with us, yeah, Nolan K. Bushnell. He's a very innovative guy, and you know, he almost had the first PC on the marketplace,
but
he just missed it. Yeah, so he's made millions and he's lost millions, but he's quite a colorful character. There you go, Nolan K. Bushnell, the father of the video game industry and founder of Atari.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio, coming to you from the Virtual Faculty Lounge at Stratford University and heard over these fine radio stations: WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, and WTOP FM HD2 Washington. Please visit our website, techtalkonline.com. At that website, you can sign up to receive our podcast weekly. You can view outlines of each of our previous shows and listen to them there as well. And you can send us emails. So if you have a tech question, go to techtalkonline.com, and Dr. Schertz will answer those questions in an upcoming show. You can also learn more about our sponsor, Stratford University, by going to stratford.edu, and there you will find out about all of the fabulous educational opportunities available to you at Stratford University. Tech Talk Radio continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here.
That's right. It would be me, your fill-in broadcaster today, your co-host of the show, Jim Russ, here with Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio. A few moments ago in Profiles in IT, we talked about Nolan K. Bushnell, the father of Atari. Now, when Bushnell left Atari in 1978, he created a chain of restaurants where you could go and play video games, much like the Atari that he created. Tell me now what the name of that restaurant chain was. They're no longer in business, I don't believe. If you got the answer to that, call me now at 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. What restaurant chain did Nolan K. Bushnell found? If you have the correct answer, you'll win tickets for two to the Escoffier Stratford University, fine dining on the campus of Stratford University, Falls Church, or in Woodbridge, Virginia.
There was a big announcement at our Fermilab.
Uh-huh.
See, Fermilab is located near Chicago. Not everything relating to presidential politics in Chicago is newsworthy. There's more than one.
There's more than just politics in Chicago.
There's more.
Right.
Thank you very much.
I'm here to help.
The Fermilab's collision detector, the Fermilab CDF, observed some very unusual activity.
Really?
They were doing some 1.94 tera electron volt collisions with protons, and they observed too many muons.
Huh?
Now, muons are...
A muon?
A muon is...
Isn't that a new car by Nissan?
No, it's got either a negative or a positive charge, and it's got a half a spin. It's one of the particles in the standard model. Now, this is the thing that's got them so excited. The production of an anomalously high number of muon pairs gives the exciting possibility that there may be a new, relatively long-lived particle that has been observed. A particle that was not predicted by the standard model.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why this is so important in a way, because remember, the Large Hadron Collider in CERN is coming up, is going to be making their first collision in the spring.
We get through the holiday season before they blow up the Earth then,
yeah,
right?
Well, see, a magnet melted, and they had a computer glitch, and so they have a small delay.
Which means we all get to live a little longer,
right. That's going to be a 14 tera electron volt beam, and so the Fermilab's only a 1.94 tera electron, and so Fermilab's would like to just get one more discovery out before the Large Hadron Collider, and so they are hoping that they've discovered some new particle that is not predicted by the standard model. There were 600 scientists on this experiment. The results are very controversial, so only 400 of the 600 would allow their name to be put on the paper because they didn't believe it, so 200 people were boycotting it. So it's not clear what it means, but it is certainly an exciting development for all of us in physics. Did you hear about scientists turning tequila into diamonds?
No.
Now this is
why would you want?
This,
well, okay, no, I know why you want to do that.
This is an interest. Yeah, instead of drinking it.
Yeah. Drinking it's fun, but selling it would be fun, too.
Okay, and you'd expect the researchers working on turning tequila into diamonds would be Mexican scientists.
But they're not.
They are.
They are.
A team of Mexican scientists found that heated vapor from 80 proof, now that would be 40% alcohol, 80
proof. That's some pretty strong stuff.
Yeah, it's a tequila blanco. That's the white tequila, not the yellow tequila, the tequila blanco, the white tequila. When deposited on silicon or stainless steel, can form thin diamond films.
Really?
Now, the key to this surprising discovery is tequila's ratio of hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon, which lies within, miraculously, the diamond growth region.
Interesting.
Originally, scientists were experimenting with creating diamonds from organic solutions such as acetone, ethanol, methanol. They were, you know, it's a whole big chemistry deal. And they realized that this was that the optimum solution exactly matched what was in tequila. So they actually went out and bought some cheap white tequila and ran the same experiment. And the final diamond films were as hard and heat resistant as those made from the official item.
Now the question is, were they drinking some of the stuff while they were working on it?
I don't really know if they were or not.
That could have made the experiment much more fun.
It could have. Now these are thin. These are not like gem grade diamonds.
Sure.
These are little tiny diamond spheres or diamond bits that actually would be good for making coatings for cutting tools, where you can have like a diamond film on a cutting tool. Or they could be used for high-power semiconductors where you need high thermal conductivity, or as radiation detectors, or as optical electronic devices. Now, they're continuing to test different types of tequilas for their diamond-producing ability.
This knife sure tastes good.
That's right, I'm telling you. Now, that's something that you'd only find out here on Tech Talk.
Absolutely, because we are hooked into alcohol technology here, because the show is, after all, alcohol-fueled.
This is Tech Talk Radio, coming to you on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Stand by. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different. With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed. Stratford University. Just start it, and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. I'm Jim Russ, and you are listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Multiple social networks can reveal your secrets. Now, this has been commonly known to people that are in the security business. They know that you could have multiple sources of unclassified information, which, if uncorrelated, don't reveal anything. But if somebody could correlate five sources of unclassified information and put them together, you might be able to weave a story that could infer classified or secret information. Well, the same thing is happening to social networks, because people might log on to, say, LinkedIn, which is a business network. See, when it gets close to the windows, it goes down.
Yeah, well, you can't, unless you're watching on Home and Garden TV, you can't see.
See, no.
Blimpy has gone to the window.
Okay,
and
I'm going to try to drive him away from the window here.
You know what about these windows? They probably have some sort of metallic coating on them.
Okay, I'm driving Blimpy back out of harm's way.
Are you sure about
that?
Well,
no, not really. Okay, come on, Blimpy,
no!
Blimpy, come on, Blimpy. Blimpy's going. Come on, Blimpy. Okay.
What I want to do.
We've got a drunk drive. Listen, I hope I can't get a ticket for drunk blimp driving.
You need to land Blimpy on that table over there. You know, I think we need to do another experiment. We figured out that there's the air return over in the one corner. We've got the air ducts here. We need to get the air blown out of here and see how we can fight those kind of currents.
Because I think air currents are definitely an issue
in a radio studio. It's fun.
Well,
it's an experiment.
It is definitely an experiment. Well,
and
Google,
we're all about that.
Researchers at Google started looking at this, and they actually published a paper, which is going to be coming out at the Web 2.0 Security and Privacy Conference, which will be held in May, and it's called Undermining Privacy and Social Networks. It's available now on the web in PDF form.
Mm-hmm.
And what they discovered, for instance, somebody could say, as a hypothetical situation, go on to a business social network called LinkedIn and have things that they would want to reveal to their business associates.
Okay.
Then they could be on another website like MySpace, which would have maybe some kooky friends that were friends of theirs and exploits that they'd done there. And perhaps there would be one piece of data, like a login name or something that could link the MySpace account with the LinkedIn account. And all of a sudden, all of your business people can Okay, I gotta save Blimpy. Blimpy's,
yeah, Blimpy is
Blimpy. I've got to save. Blimpy's. What's happened? I gotta get Blimpy. I gotta turn Blimpy around now. Okay, yeah. Now I gotta. Okay, Blimpy, let's go, baby.
Why are you flying into my face?
I don't know. I'm out of trouble. So they actually did quite a bit of, and now there are tools out which can actually surf the web, and they can try to look for linkages. And the approach that Google calls when you link these different social networks, they call it merging social graphs.
Hmm.
And they were able to go through a number of examples where they were able to reveal quite private data that people thought was actually not available. For instance, Netflix revealed data about user activity and the different kinds of movies that people were ordering, but they didn't actually tie in their name, but they had some other data on it. Then if you went to a movie data site called IMDb,
yeah. It
was possible to look at user activity on IMDb and get correlations with Netflix, because people would actually look at a review and then order the Netflix movie, and by correlating the dates, they were actually able to connect up actual users with Netflix data quite easily. Now, the Google team proposed a solution of all kinds of privacy warnings, but they basically said, look, if you put something on the net, just assume that everybody's going to see it, no matter which social group you're in, because actually you can very easily correlate the thing. There's also a lot of information regarding health records. And they looked at health records that were sent to insurers. They combined that with publicly available information about like if somebody was looking at Wikipedia articles on health conditions, they could actually correlate health records with other things, and you could actually draw some conclusions. So the Google's research team is called Undermining Privacy on Social Networks. It's something to be aware of, especially something you should watch what your kids are doing on the net.
Absolutely.
Because they could be revealing way too much.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
What does lorem ipsum mean?
Lorem ipsum. Well, have you ever seen this? Whenever people are writing something, they Greek it in. You know, you do some...
Greek it in.
Hey,
Greek it up, everybody.
Greek it in. You know, when you're actually writing a document and you're laying it out and you just want to fill it with a bunch of... text. They, you know, sort of all the desktop publishing, they have this pseudo Latin thing that starts out with lorem ipsum,
mm-hmm.
and it goes on after that, and then you fill it in with this pseudo Latin, and they call it Greeking the page, so you can see how it will look. Well, there was Richard McClintock, a Latin professor at Hampton Sydney College of Virginia, wondered where this came from, because lorem ipsum actually is actually not grammatically correct in Latin. So he started looking around for things, and he found a quote from Cicero, and this is actually a cannibalized section of a sentence from Cicero, and they basically missed, it should be dolorum instead of lorem, and they just dropped it off. And back in the 1500s, some printer just sort of took this Latin text and they just sort of took a piece of it, and that has been carried on and on and on. And actually what it means, when you go back and put it together and take out the errors of from Cicero, it means there's no one who loves pain itself, who seeks after it and wants to have it simply because it is pain.
I say that's an accurate statement.
Yes, indeed.
Well,
so
there
you go.
A few people.
Lorem ipsum is actually, it should be dolorem ipsum, and those are the first two letters, first two words of that Greeking phrase.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We've got more coming up. Food science next on Tech Talk Radio. Stay with us.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed. Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. Jim Russ here with you, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk about this Twitter application.
I was
going
to say, this really grabbed my attention. Twitter.
There is a
fast food truck?
Yeah, there is this little fast food company. They just started up about 6 months ago. Koji. It's Korean barbecue.
I got to find this while you're
and
talking,
listen,
okay?
There are only two Koji trucks in L.A. These are in Los Angeles. And these guys started Twittering. So what they do, they basically are using Twitter in order to tell customers where they're located, what the latest deal is. So, for instance, one of the Twitters that came out this morning was Koji specialed at the trucks, and the grilled asparagus with yellow nectarines and sesame seeds. That was their special.
This sounds good. It's in L.A. Do they deliver?
No, it's a truck, and so it's only two trucks.
I know.
And what
I'm
being
funny.
What they do is, and then they Twitter their location. I'm at 1st and 14th, and so people sign up for the Twitter. They look what the things are, and there's kind of a game of trying to go find the truck and get your barbecue. This Koji, which has only been in business for 6 months, is actually known nationally because they have such a huge Twitter following.
They're about to get another one.
So this, the Koji, yeah, here we go. It launched last November, and herds have been following it around. Now, Koji wasn't the first fast food place to use Twitter, but it was the one that was really the most successful. So this is actually, the name is recognizable throughout the country, and they only have two taco trucks, and they've only been doing this since last November.
Koji is in Santa Monica at Bergamont Station, 2525 Michigan Avenue.
There you go. So you can sign up for the Twitter, and you guys in Washington, maybe we could do a little Twitter here because there are a lot of fast food trucks out there.
Right. Do you Twitter?
No, I don't Twitter.
I have a Twitter. I really haven't used it for anything.
No, I've played with there. Twitter, but I haven't. I'm not a serious tweet.
No, I'm not either. It might be fun to mess around
yeah,
with.
Yeah, it would be.
Look at this. This is pretty funny.
So there you go. That's a great application.
I think, do you mind if I run out to Bergamont Station and get us some Koji?
Oh, no, that'd be fine.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio, coming to you from the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University, your classroom of the airwaves via 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2. Coming up after the break, food science, frozen meat, mushrooms, and something seasonal, the magic of champagne bubbles, here on Tech Talk Radio. Stand by. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Demand is great for IT professionals that can gain a security clearance. According to a recent Federal Computer Week article, federal agencies and private sector businesses that support government contracts can't get enough credentialed people to keep pace with government work. Tremendous opportunities exist for mid-career and late-career workers if they are retrained, particularly if they have had previous military service. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares students to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. Jim Russ on Tech Talk Radio, and now it is time for food science.
Now, let's talk about freezing your meat.
Okay.
This is the question. You buy meats, you know, you go to the grocery store and you can find steak on sale.
Sure.
And it goes on sale every other month. Should you buy 10 steaks and freeze them, or should you only buy enough steak to eat that day and only eat fresh steak? And I think that really depends on whether you believe you can freeze your meat.
I believe I can.
Yes, indeed you can. Let's talk about how to freeze and how long you can freeze it and what it does.
Okay.
Now, let's talk about how long you can freeze meat. Freezing duration. Frozen meats can be frozen indefinitely as long as your freezer maintains a temperature of 0 degrees Fahrenheit or lower.
Hmm.
Now, at this temperature, bacteria, yeast, and molds are inactive, but they're not destroyed.
Huh.
Freezing simply stops the clock as far as microbes are concerned. Now, here's the deal. Enzymes are not stopped by freezing, but they're merely slowed down.
Uh-huh.
So the quality of the food may diminish over time slightly. It's not a safety issue, but it's a food quality concern. So if you store meat for a year, it is going to taste a little different than if you store it a couple of months.
Fascinating.
Now, freezer burn. This is what really is bad. Now, freezer burn is avoidable. Now, it's the real quality detractor. Freezer burn occurs when air comes in contact with the surface of the food. The frozen water on the surface or just under the surface sublimates. Sublimation is when a solid, instead of going from solid liquid to gas, it goes directly from solid to gas.
Mm-hmm.
It sublimates, and then at that point, the meat changes flavor. Now, it's still safe to eat, but the freezer-burned meat just has this bad flavor.
It doesn't taste good.
Now, the good news is you can cut off the freezer burn,
uh-huh.
And then the meat on the inside is still okay. Now, you can risk freezer burn by good packaging. Now, here's what you want to do is if you're going to package the meat, you want to get a plastic bag for the freezer. Now, you can't get a baggie. You've got to get a freezer bag
right.
That's thicker plastic. If you get a baggie, it's not going to work. You get a freezer bag, that's going to be, and you want to squeeze out as much air as possible before you seal it up.
Good.
Now, if you put multiple pieces of meat within the freezer bag, you may want to wrap them in tin foil so they don't stick together.
Good.
Now, as far as thawing it goes, there are three ways to do it. The
mm-hmm.
best way to do it is by just putting it in the refrigerator
okay.
and letting it thaw out, but it takes several hours,
days.
Several days. Actually, it's 5 hours per pound for
uh-huh.
large meat. My preferred method, now, but then you can refreeze it if you thaw it slowly like that. My preferred method is a cold water bath. I just put it in a leak-proof bag, throw it in cold water in the sink, and then it... change the water in about 30 minutes. And
the meat directly to the, it needs to be covered up still.
Yeah, I put it in. I leave it in the freezer bag, actually.
Right.
And then that really works pretty well, but you really shouldn't refreeze it after that. But I can thaw it out. It doesn't change flavor. The worst way to do it is the microwave because that tends to burn it. So don't thaw it out in the microwave.
Now,
mushrooms.
It's time for mushrooms.
Yes.
Now, food historians tell us that prehistoric people most likely consumed fungi and
uh-huh.
mushrooms.
They grew it themselves.
Yeah, these foods mm-hmm. are easy to forage, and they're easy to incorporate into meals. The ancient Romans appreciated the taste. They grew mushrooms. Modern civilization started using mushrooms around the 16th century.
There's a lot of trial and error with mushrooms. I'm sure a lot of people ate mushrooms they weren't supposed to and found out the hard way that
that's
they were
right.
poisonous,
well,
right?
Well, see, only people who eat the right mushroom are still around.
That's correct.
Sort of like evolution.
It's,
evolution
it's
favors
very
people.
Darwinian.
Yes, evolution favors those who eat mushrooms that keep them alive. Now, mushrooms are a subset of a much larger plant world of fungus, or
mm-hmm.
fungi,
mm-hmm.
if I use the plural.
Yes.
Fungus means a group of plants that include mushrooms, yeast, and molds. Now, unlike more advanced plants, fungi lack chlorophyll. That's why they're not green.
Right.
And you see, chlorophyll allows plants to convert sunlight to food. So without chlorophyll, they can't make their own food, so they have to live off other things. So if they live off dead plants or animals, that's why you'll frequently see mushrooms or fungi on, you know, rotting wood. They could also live as parasites on living animals. Sometimes you'll see fungi living, on scales of different types of reptiles,
right.
Or in a symbiotic relationship between fungi and the roots of trees. And so they basically have to pull their nutrients from whatever they're sucking the life out of.
Yep, got about a minute or so, Doc.
So mushrooms, the word mushroom is traced back to the Latin word mucerio, which is a word of unknown meaning. Mushrooms entered America in the 19th century, and they became very popular in the 1890s. The two most popular type of mushrooms, truffles. Now, truffles are mushrooms or fungi that they subterranean. It's part of the tuber family. And they were known to the Babylonians and Romans, and they really liked the truffles there. And
Take
the other type is the portobello mushroom, which is the big one, and that became popular in the last 20 years. Portobello was basically a name that came with the marketing guys, so they could sell mushrooms that previously were not that popular.
And finally, this from the mailbag.
Bonjour. My name is Sherry. I live in Paris, France, and listen to Tech Talk via podcast. So great, we have got an overseas Tech Talk listener. I have a seasonal food science question for you. What makes the bubbles in champagne? How is it that they seem to come out of nowhere?
Ah.
How is it the bubbles never seem to stop? Why does this work better in a fluted glass rather than any other type of barware?
Uh-huh.
Obviously, Cherie has been doing some research.
She's been dipping into the booze, I think.
That's right. Best regards and Happy New Year from your biggest fan across the pond, Sherry.
But wait, there's more.
I know.
More? You're not going to read that on the air.
Okay, no, we can't read that on the air.
Oh, sure you
Okay,
can.
By the way, you guys have the sexiest voices of any announcers on Federal News Radio. Whoa!
Hello!
Are you as hot as you sound? May we get an autograph picture? Hey, is Federal News Radio sending out autograph pictures of the Tech Talk
only
boys?
Only if we're taking them, I guess.
Well, Cherie, you know, bubbles in champagne are an interesting question.
Yes,
they actually are dissolved carbon dioxide gas, which is coming out of the liquid. Now, it turns out they start out as strings of bubbles that rise in pairs, and they gradually transition to bubbles in groups of three or so, and then they finally settle down to a pattern of regularly spaced individual bubbles. Now, it turns out that these bubbles arise from nucleation points on the glass wall.
Ah, imperfection,
see, that's why,
right?
Imperfections in the glass wall. That's why the fluted glass tends to be a little bit better because it has more imperfections around those creases.
Ah.
Now, the nucleation points are small defects in the glass that trap vibrating pockets of carbon dioxide. Dissolved gases in the champagne gradually collect in the vibrating bubbles inside the defect, causing it to grow and soon expel gas from the defect. And so it starts out there, and then you see a string of them, and gradually they start coming out
everywhere. And that's why they just keep going and going and going.
That's right. There's a lot of research on, looking at bubbles coming out of dissolved gases, because nitrogen bubbles that grow in blood vessels cause the bends. So they want to study a nucleation of this sort of dissolved gases coming out of a liquid. But that was an excellent question, Cherie.
It was.
And I'm telling you, I spent a lot of time watching those bubbles.
I bet you did.
And so I did a lot of research that over this last New Year's.
I spent a little bit of time myself doing just the same thing.
That's right. And they're still looking at bubbles.
That's it for this week and this year on Tech Talk Radio. Thank you all for listening, and Happy New Year to you and yours from all of us at Tech Talk Radio and Federal News Radio.
The jackpot question is,
see in 2012.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as